Hey everyone, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 50. We've made it to 50, Brad.
Yes.
We'll see if we make it to 51 after this. We have an awesome guest this week, who's Adam. Adam, who is on Twitter at Menzotoliosis. So we're going to talk with Adam in a sec. First, I just want to say that Brad and I decided to do something a little different this week. We're going to actually experiment with only recording the conversation with Adam, both the intro conversation and then the set one and set two recap from this amazing show we're going to discuss. And then we're going to point people to Fish On Demand, Fish Tracks, Live Fish, wherever you want to go listen to this show, in an effort to kind of make the file size a little smaller, and hopefully make it easier for people to just either listen to the conversation and then go back and connect with the music and then come back. And I know a lot of people just listen to the conversation. A lot of people just want a show recommendation. So hopefully this will help with both of those. But Adam, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here, guys.
Thanks for coming to us from the Midwest, where the show that we decided upon comes from as well.
Yeah, but, like a year ago, we've been talking about this show.
Yeah, it's been a while. And surprisingly enough, our queue's pretty long for people to come on. So I think that's where this came from. And maybe we talked about it even before it came out on Live Fish, but there's a little preview or a little guess. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit, Adam, about you know, your fish history, what got you into it, and really if there's a moment or a show that really turned you into a fan, kind of your it moment.
Well, this was it, man. I was in high school at the time. I was a junior, and I got into the Grateful Dead around 95, right, a little bit before Jerry died.
Sure.
The school that I was in, there was a bunch of older heads that went there, alumni, whatever, that it was kind of the thing to do, to wear tie-dyes and be a deadhead. And so I got a bunch of tapes from some of the older guys and was really turned on by it. I was really into heavy metal at the time, which sounds weird. I think a lot of us have kind of been there. Mm-hmm. But so I started getting into the Dead in 95, 96, and you start hearing about this fish band, but it was mostly Dead at the time. And I remember I was eating in a Coney Island here, which is pretty famous after bar restaurant, with my buddy, and there was a Metro Times. And we were looking through it. It was late at night, and there was an advertisement for Fish coming to the Palace. And it was that Fish Destroys America, that ad with the Japanese guy. And I was like, "Holy cow, Fish is coming! We need to check that out." And
yeah, those are great ads, or you know, artwork.
I wish I still had that that advertisement in the paper. But most of my friends at that school, I actually transferred my sophomore year, and so it was kind of a little hippie scene, but not like my other school. So I had to convince some of my friends to go to the show. There was two guys and two girls, and I remember the only thing I remember about going to the show was we piled in one of the girls' vans. It was like her mom's van, and there's five of us, and there was probably about six joints going around. And we pulled into the Palace parking lot, and it looked like something out of Cheech and Chong or Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And
nice.
There's police escort, like you have a stoplight, and there's police escorting everybody in. The windows are cracked. There's just smoke and blowing out everywhere. I'm like, we're busted for sure. We're not even going to get into the show. We drove right past them and into the show and into the parking lot. And it was my... I saw some further shows and stuff like that, and so you kind of get into the scene, and it just fish. The fish one just felt a little different. It was cold, but everybody was still outside and kind of doing shakedown and stuff like that. And you know, that was getting to the show and how I got there. And
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Brad and I both. Well, we saw our first shows at the Palace, '95, and.
Right.
My second show was the Palace 96, and then I saw this show, the Palace 97, but then some in between 97. So, like, the majority of my first 10 shows were Palace shows.
That's definitely right.
It's interesting. I was re-listening to the show this today and thinking about the experience in 97, and the one thing I was thinking about is that, like, I had seen Champagne and then nothing before Cleveland, which was the night before this, And just thinking about, like, back in the day, we're so used to now getting the shows immediately. Like, I think Champagne was the only show of the fall I had heard at that point, because I hadn't, you know, like, gotten any tapes or anything from the rest of the tour, which made these shows, like, so much more awesome when you were there, because you just, you didn't know about the 10 shows before and how awesome they were, unless you were on some one of the two, like, internet chat rooms that existed or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And I just remember being totally, completely blown away. I don't know, Brad, about you, but that was my that's my memory of leading up to this.
Didn't see many shows in 96, maybe just a couple. I don't remember exactly. But then 97 came around, and luckily we started to go a lot more. We were seniors. So I definitely had a lot
in high school.
Yeah, seniors in high school. We definitely had more free reign to go where we wanted to. So Champagne and all those places, and Champagne was like a weird date. It was kind of off, right? They were coming back from the West,
yeah,
and that was their only stop on the way to Hampton. And yep, then we both really wanted to go to Hampton, but we couldn't make it, and then they were up in the Northeast. So when they came back close, we definitely saw as many as we could, and we were really excited. I remember the weather of that Cleveland show was pretty bad. I don't know if it was just cold, but I saw them there in 95 too. And both those shows are really good. So, you know, like you said, my first couple of shows were basically either at the Convocation Center or at the Palace, which is pretty sweet, but also pretty big places to see them.
Yeah.
One of the things that I remember most about the show was that it was really full. Like, the Palace was huge.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people there. And in 95, it wasn't like that. There weren't as many. I don't think. Not that I remember. So... I thought that was really great. Full of people we knew. It was kind of a hometown show, and I felt that the energy was there. Even in the cold parking lot, like Adam said, it was a lot better than 95. Just the scene, I thought, at least the people, people's excitement building up to it or whatever. So,
and Adam, what was your Dead like Fish crossover experience? Was this like,
I was 100% Deadhead before the show. I heard Sample in the Jar and a live one, a few songs off of Live One. That was it going into the show. And I don't know.
That's awesome. And do you were you immediately kind of hooked after the show?
So yeah, from the opener Golgi. I don't believe I heard Golgi going into that, but the first time they started singing, I saw you with the ticket stub in your hand. People just went nuts, and it just felt right. It felt like home, and you see the lights go on, and people just going nuts. And I remember getting chills. I mean, it was probably 5 minutes into the show, and you don't get that level of new anymore. Like Golgi, if I saw Golgi again, I'd be like, I gotta go to the bathroom.
I don't know.
But then it was just so perfect, and it was good.
Well, there's definitely like a uniqueness to the set list and the song placement and all that. But RG kind of talked about like the crossover, Adam, or, you know, asked Adam about his crossover between the two, the Dead and Fish. And let's ask a little bit or talk a little bit about, you know, that pretty exciting news about the summer coming up. Adam, you also do the Grateful Dead listening party, right, on Twitter, the at GDTLP or something?
Yeah, that's correct. Well, I did for a while, and Chillwig's pretty much taken it over now. He pretty much runs it. He does a good job with it. And
yeah, he's a smart dude, so that's probably a good choice. Not that you're not.
A lot smarter than me.
So tell us, are you excited about this summer, the July 4th weekend? You going to go? You got any reservations, anything like that?
I can't be more excited for it. For me, it's a musical menage a trois. It's the Grateful Dead. It's Fish. It's me. It's in Soldier Field. It's perfect. I mean,
yeah.
There's no place I'd rather be for the 4th of July than watching that. And people can complain about the pricing or how they're going to bill at the Grateful Dead. But when it comes down to it, 4th of July night, just sitting there watching Trey play with Phil and Bob, I mean, why wouldn't that excite you? If you like the Grateful Dead, if you like Fish, if you like both, I mean... The music's probably going to be 99% watered down shit. It's not going to be anything
right
new or exciting. It's just they're going to play the old jams. But if there's that 1% chance that I'm in Soldier Field and I get that chill where the music just hits you, there's no price, no money, no title is going to ruin that for me. I wouldn't. It's better than being on the couch at home complaining about it. It makes sense to me why somebody.
I don't know. It's pretty fun to do that.
I haven't heard any of the complaining. What's been the complaining? You said ticket prices. Has there been other complaining?
So ticket prices I've seen have been like $59 to $200. That's what I saw on the website, and people are saying they got to take out a second mortgage for that. I don't know. I don't think it's that expensive.
Right? Yeah.
It's not. I think the other complaining I've seen, and I don't know if it's really complaining, but people are saying that, you know, why doesn't Trey just play with Fish instead, you know, and let these old guys kind of sail off into the sunset and that sort of thing. But you cannot blame Trey for accepting the invitation. Jesus, I mean, this is like...
No,
Trey's
there, man. I don't understand why somebody would want to separate them or say they're giving death threats to Trey or things on Facebook where they're the guy with a sniper rifle. It's stupid to me.
I didn't see that either. That's really intense. Fucked up.
It is fucked up.
So it'll be fun, and I you can't go in there expecting to see some like 45-minute Dark Star that's gonna melt your face, but like it might happen, and if it doesn't, at least you got to hear Dark Star and like some other cool songs.
Good send-off. Bob's not doing so good, so who knows how much longer he's got. But 95, I mean, not everybody got to say goodbye in 95. There's been a whole other generation of deadheads that have come along, and this is a great opportunity for them to kind of just say goodbye and ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you got to see the Dead in the sort of early 90s years?
I didn't. I was 15 when Jerry died, and I was just getting into them probably a month before that. My buddy was talking about it, and we were talking about going to shows that year or later that year. And next thing I knew, I was still painting at the time. I'm a painter now, own a painting company, and it was 95. I remember pulling into the job and hearing it on the radio, and just it was just a huge bummer. It was just awful.
We were about the same. No, I think we were 15 or 16 also, and that was like. I saw my first Fish show that fall, so that was, I think if the Dead had been touring in, you know, summer 96, we definitely would have been able to see them, but it was like, it just didn't work that year.
Yeah, we just missed it. Although, you know, I think our ages and our location, we were lucky enough to catch Acoustic Hookah, so that was cool too, right?
Yeah. We got to. Hookahville.
Dude, Hookahville. So many Hookahvilles.
Yeah. 99, Bob,
we were at. Oh, did you go to that?
Yeah, were you guys there?
I don't think so. I was there 97 or 90. I forget. Maybe it was there 99. Cause we 99, were...
Man, they had Deep Banana Blackout and Rad Dog and Arlo Guthrie. And that's probably the best one I went to.
We could have been there because we were in college in Columbus, so it was like... It was right there. We went a couple times. I just don't remember the years, but I remember dudes walking around and with gigantic, like twigs of bud, and just that was the first time I'd seen that, and I was like, "Whoa, this place rules!"
It's something. In 99. I was there by myself, and seen the shows, and I got real fucked up for some reason. I tried to get out to my car to find something, and I just passed out in the middle of nowhere. And I was sleeping there like on the grass. And I woke up in the middle of the night and there was a drum circle like around me. And I woke up and some girl was like kissing me. It was just a really awful, ugly looking girl too. And I'm trying to get her off me. And all of a sudden like her father came and like tried to drag her off of me.
Oh my God.
That's the only thing I remember about Hookahville.
That's amazing.
It was just in the middle of the drum circle. They just decided to form it around some passed out kid.
Dude, that's amazing.
It's good.
Good times ahead in what is that, Buckeye Lake or whatever? Is that where it was?
Yeah, that was.
That's where it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam, what's your what was your like the next several years after this? And I guess if people don't know by now, we are playing we're gonna play or refer you to play. I don't know how to say it now that we're doing trying this different thing. But 12-6-97 from the Palace, which all three of us were at, which is amazing. But after this, after the fall of 97, Adam, how did your Fish history evolve from there? Did you stay right on until they took a break, or did you take a break too, or how did that, and when did you kind of come back around in 3.0?
Yeah, I saw a bunch of shows on 1.0, mostly Midwest shows, Deer Creek, Ohio, Polaris, Toronto, stuff like that. I moved to Florida in 99. I was working at Disney World. I came home for the Palace show in 99. I took a break, and then I went back down to Disney. And saw a bunch in 2000. I moved back to Miami this time, on and off between 2001, 2003. I think I saw my most shows in 2003. But yeah, I've been there every year. And 2004 was really bad. I know everybody talks about the music and stuff like that, but the scene felt bad. I remember going to Deer Creek and just camping by myself, and it was just a bad vibe everywhere. And it was great that they took a break, and I felt like they needed to, and I'm sure everybody did. And then I kind of just forgot about Fish for years. Like, I mean, I still listen to them, but it kind of just grew on me that they were gone. It was just like an emptiness that you felt in me, but you kind of accepted it, and you never really thought they'd come back. And I remember hearing news in 2009, and I think my mom actually told me she saw it in the paper, an article saying Fish is going to make a comeback. And this was before I was on Twitter or stuff. I don't really have too many friends around here that are into it. So, I mean, I was thrilled.
Yeah.
I talked to one buddy, and he said that he was going to Alpine for that. It was 2009. And he asked if I wanted to jump in with him. Yeah, hell yeah. And that was probably just 2004 left a really bad taste in my mouth. And 2009 was just, it felt like being reborn into the scene. I remember driving, and we drove through Chicago, and we stopped at a rest area between Chicago and Alpine, and there was just a bunch of Fish heads everywhere, and everybody was just smiling, and it just felt so good again. The shows weren't anything special, but just the whole, just getting back into it was what I needed at the time. It was great.
I think Alpine Valley is one of those hidden, I mean, I know a lot of people know this, but like, and there's some great Dead shows there too, but it's one of those hidden gems in the Midwest that, some people don't travel that far enough from the East, I don't think, to come to it, because it's one of those places that I feel like everybody should experience, especially a Fish show at.
It's probably my favorite venue. The hill's a bitch, that mm-hmm. slope. But the whole surrounding area, just the whole weekend hanging around in that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, just
it's beautiful there.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
I know this is, you had said sort of the, you know, this was your first show, this was your it moment. How does this, when you went back and... And we'll get into the song details and everything in a little bit, but what was the kind of overall takeaway from this, and are you still as excited about it as you were then?
Yeah, I was blown away. I'm still, are you talking about, do I feel the same way about the show?
Yeah,
every time I play that show, it just brings back memories. It's my first show, and it makes me happy.
That's about
it's a really
all
big yeah. first show, no doubt about it.
But wow. I'm glad they released it. Because I always have the audience recording, and the audience recording is good, but you know what? Both are good. There's some stuff on the release that you can't hear. I think the Golgi, I don't think you can get the crowd reaction from it. And I don't think that Golgi would mean anything to anybody else, but it's just, it was my moment when the crowd erupted, and you can really hear it on the odd, but not the soundboard, not the release. So.
Yeah, the crowd, like I said, it just was really, really pumped that night. And I don't know why it was. Was it a Saturday? It was a Saturday, right?
I don't remember what day it was.
Yeah, it was, because Dayton was Sunday. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was Friday, a Saturday. Saturday,
Sunday. Yeah. There's a handful of shows that I really, you feel that energy. That this was definitely one of them. I felt a lot of that in 99, some arena shows, and 2000 in Allstate, I think it was 2000 in Chicago. Yeah. It seemed like the crowd was really pumped up for, and some New Year shows and stuff like that. But this was just a random day in the suburbs of Detroit. People were just pumped. I don't know if it's because they were playing so well and the word spread, but people were excited. I remember walking in, there was a half naked guy in the upper deck with a conch shell blowing into it. I don't know why I remember that.
Just losing his mind.
It was so loud. Do you guys remember that at all? The guy blown into a shell at the top.
But that's amazing.
Yeah.
I had floor seats this show, which I thought they were kind of far back, and that's such a big floor. I kind of wish I was like, you know, first bowl or something, because I was so far back from the stage. But
I was right off the lights. Floor, right on the side by Fishman.
Oh, awesome. Nice.
Yeah, I'll never forget the seats. That's one of the things from just listening to this again. I don't know, Brad, if we were sitting together maybe for part of it, but I was like right the first section off the floor right behind the soundboard, so straight on, like probably 10 or 15 rows up. And I just remember it's probably the first show that I was at, the first Fish show in like a big place where I was just kind of straight looking at them, you know, looking at the stage, able to see everything perfectly. And it was like, man, I'll never forget it. It was a very special night. And that three-night run, Cleveland, Detroit, Dayton, at least the Detroit, Dayton back-to-back are definitely the two best shows I've seen back-to-back, like, ever.
That whole weekend.
I mean, the whole fall, I guess, the whole year was amazing, but that just, man, this was really fucking awesome.
Yeah, that Dayton show was great, that first set.
Yeah.
Really reminds me of the Dead 77 Cornell, and then the next night with Help Slip Frank, and it's just both bands at the peak of their careers that just put in two shows back to back. That I always compare the two to. I don't know if anybody else does, but just those compare to me for some reason. Mm. It just the momentum carries over to the next day, and that's what that Dayton show feels like. It's just
locked in,
so fired up after that Pala show, and it just transcended into the next night.
Yeah, and I think, RJ, you made a good point that there wasn't the automatic releases of the shows back then, so there wasn't talk on Twitter about, you know, the funk that they were bringing, or, you know, the fact that there was an Isabella and those things. I mean, I guess you could get those on like a deals page or whatever, but back then you were going just because it was Fish. You weren't too sure what you were going to catch unless you were reading, you know, Good Deals page a bunch and reading all the comments and stuff like that. So that in itself kind of lends into like the just go because you're going. Nowadays, people are going with expectations so much. It's kind of nostalgic to go back and think about like, oh, let's just go up to the Palace and get tickets via mail and, you know, meet some friends and just go because it's Fish and not have any expectations, which just can't be done anymore, I guess.
Yeah. And right? Yeah, totally. And Adam, I was going to ask, I guess, before we talk about this show, what do you think about the last couple of years, about, you know, 2012, 13, 14? What do you expect this year?
I don't know what I expect this year. I don't know what the band's up to. I don't know how much practice Trey's putting in with the Dead thing and what their tour schedule is going to look like. I think it's going to be probably a few less shows than in the past, which kind of sucks because it's not like they're touring like crazy anymore. But I think it's going to be good music. I think Trey's really going to benefit from this collaboration, and hopefully it finds its way into Fish this summer, and hopefully they get some fall shows. But the past few years have been great. I have no complaints. It's always good to get new music out of them, and it may be rough at first. The wingsuit, I really love the Halloween show, and it seems like they just pushed it that summer, the following summer, but it's grown on me. It's new Fish, and I love it. It puts a new spark into the band, and just they got to find their way to incorporate it all together, and I think it's been great the last couple of years.
Nice.
So is that the consensus that there's not going to be much of a summer tour or a short one? I don't know. I haven't heard anything. What have you guys heard?
You hear about Watkins Glen and stuff like that. Yeah. I don't know what truth there is to any rumors. I don't know. I don't believe anything. So
I guess I forgot about maybe Watkins Glen, just like a festival kind of thing, and then that's it for the summer, maybe?
That's it. I hear the festival there, but who knows what.
Yeah.
It seems like they would do something in addition, maybe even like a short run in this, you know, SPAC and going up that way, maybe, or maybe in Midwest. A lot of people have been talking about a Deer Creek Alpine possibility, like post Chicago, which would be cool. I mean, it makes sense logistically. I don't know.
Yeah, and piggyback the Chicago show. We need to get back to Deer Creek. It feels like it's been forever.
Yeah. Seriously, I haven't been there since '97. Which I'd love to go back.
It's not even Deer Creek anymore, right? It's like Verizon Wireless at the Toyota Amphitheater or something.
I think it's something else since then. It's like Klepsch or something.
Yeah, it's like Klepsch.
That's right.
Good times. Yeah. It'll always be Deer Creek, though, ever since the gig crashing. So let's talk about the music. So just for the listeners, we're going to, as I said, try this experiment. As with all experiments, it may work, it may not work. But at this point, check on the display where whatever you're listening to the podcast on, you'll see links to this show at Live Fish, Fish Tracks, and Fish on Demand. So check it out and send us an email at helpingfriendlypodcast@gmail.com or send us a tweet at HFpod. Let us know what you think about this setup, and we will adjust accordingly because we're a research-based operation and we need your feedback.
Yeah, and I think this is a good show to start with, RJ, because it's a live fish release. I wasn't a huge fan of doing a live fish release, but this is a good thing to do.
Go listen to the first set and then come back and pick it up.
All right, awesome. So I hope you enjoyed set one from 12-6-97, The Palace in Auburn Hills. They opened with Golgi, as we talked about, and we heard Antelope. Train Song was next, In the Bathtub Gin, which flowed pretty nicely into Foam. And then we heard Sample in a Jar, Fee in the Maze, and Cavern closed out the first set. We talked a little bit about the opener, but just a really great opener. But then, here comes Antelope in slot two. What a great opening to a really awesome show. One thing that I forgot to mention before is I totally remember them playing Miles Davis.
They played Bitches Brew pre-show.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Pre-show. Yeah. And I was like, this is crazy because it's not normal pre-show music. It's kind of, obviously Bitches Brew is what it is. So I can't say I really expected anything different or funky from because of that pre-show music. I just remember noticing it. Like, this is cool. So pretty different opening to a set one. I'd obviously never heard Antelope in the second slot before.
That Antelope is great.
Yeah, great, great, great peak. I mean, it rages. They really cycle through the thing, don't you think? RJ?
Yeah, I mean, it's like 16 minutes long or something like that. It's crazy. And you said, Adam, they open it up nicely with Golgi, and then the most memorable point to me was that bathtub where the it's like generally just a rocking bathtub, and then they kind of slow it down and it's like almost stops, and then they get into that little groove that goes like slides right into Foam. I don't know, Adam, if that was like surprising for you at the time, but I remember being super like just freaked out by that transition.
It's one of the highlights I remember from the show, and I never heard Foam going into it, and it felt familiar. It felt like something that a jam band would sing, and years later, I mean, I grew to hate Foam for some reason for a long, long time, and then it wasn't until I got into Twitter and I became friends with Barefoot Bob, who's no longer with us. He came up with a stat for Foam. He loved it. He came up with something like 90-some% of shows that have a Foam in it have like an over 4.3 rating, and it really shows that it's a good warm up for the band. I think the technical skill that it takes to nail that song really lets the band loosen up after it. And I don't know, the song is growing on me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people hate it. I know Bailey Dice just despises it.
I really like it. It's I remember that night was just like, it was just tripping me out. It was freaking me out. I thought it was amazing. I love Bathtub going in. I thought, like, super excited to hear Bathtub. I was surprised to hear it just, one song or two songs after Antelope. And then they went to that Foam, and it's something. Something isn't right. You know what I mean? I was kind of losing it, having a great time. So, Adam, your thoughts on Foam was kind of like RJ's and I theory about Riff, that like it's a technical song, and if they play it well, then they're probably on. And, you know, it's good things to come forward. So there's another song to add to our little dumb theorem.
Hey, sure. That's what we. That's all we got is our theories that we can never prove or disprove, which is awesome.
So if they nail Rift, it's kind of the same thing. Have they ever nailed Rift?
It happened. No, it happened like three times.
That's why all the shows suck.
It happened three times.
On the album.
Yeah, but it's funny because Foam. I heard the one Foam that I heard that I was just absolutely like blown away by was Greensboro 03. And I don't know why. It might have just been like the vibe or whatever. It was nothing out of the ordinary, but that was like the live one I heard, and I was like, oh man, this song is great. And now I like it every time. But I know that it's like it's kind of a polarizing song, which is just it's funny. It's like it seems rather like innocuous to me. I don't know. It doesn't seem like super offensive, but it's also like not. There's like a little bit of technical detail that they need. You know, it's not like going to take a piss during Sparkle or something, you know.
Yep.
But yeah, it was like the bathtub into Foam was just, I remember it like very vividly, and you know, one of the great things about these shows.
That bathtub isn't Murat or a Riverport, but it's a good gin. It's worth a listen every once in a while. The whole first set, I mean, it's got a lot of highlights. A lot of people forget about the first set because they go straight to the second, but there's some songs to definitely hit up in that first set. Some a lot of highlights.
Yeah, Brad, what else stuck out for you in the first set?
I thought the Fee was great. I'd never seen a Fee before, I don't think. And my sister, who I got June to from or took from or whatever, was a big fan of Fee. So I was excited to hear that, and I was excited to share with my sister. The Maze was great. Because it's kind of an arena song, you know what I mean? It's the slow build and, you know, 10 minutes in or whatever, it's raging by then. But otherwise, you know, that's Sample and Cavern are two songs that I won't complain about, but I'm also not chasing.
Right. And the Maze was pretty good. I mean, this, you know, pretty good as in like very good, I think, but you know, these shows just, and I'm just thinking like Cleveland, Detroit, Dayton, they just, you know, everything was so technically well played. And I don't know, it's not that often that you get just like the quality of shows so many times in a row. And I guess that's almost the entire Fall 97, but the Maze sticks out here for that reason for me.
Got that cow funk in it too. That
yeah, they just couldn't get away from it no matter what, you know? Like, it was like in Maze, in really hard rocking songs, which we'll talk about in the second set. I mean, just unbelievable.
There's parts of that Maze where I never thought I would ever hear anything like that musically in a live show. Like, some of this noise that Trey was making, they call it the cow funk or what, not the, I don't know what. I think it's in the intro.
I'll
go back and listen to it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just prevalent in Fall 97, and it's what makes it so great in my mind. And
yeah, it's definitely worth a re-listen. There's no doubt.
And the second set is phenomenal. So we're gonna take a quick break and then pick it back up and talk about the second set in a minute.
All right. So that was set two in the encore from 12/6/97, December 6th at the Palace. The set opened with Tweezer, went into an Isabella, that went into Twist, into Piper. Then they played Sleeping Monkey and closed the second set out with Tweezer Reprise, and the encore was Rocky Top. I mean, this is a show for the ages, right? This, and it's because of the second set, probably one of the reasons they released it on Live Fish. But that Tweezer, it's kind of funny to note that earlier Fall 97s, they were open in first sets with Tweezers, right? 11/17, I think there's one from like Worcester or something later that month. They opened with Tweezer, and here they open the second set with Tweezer, and it's just a phenomenal Tweezer. What, 23 minutes long, kind of a funky different beginning, and it drops immediately after the composed part, immediately into that funk, that cow funk we all love. What did you guys think?
Blew my mind. That was the jam for the ages, man. That I don't think I'll ever see anything like that again. That was just. Probably
yeah.
The best Tweezer.
I mean, it's almost like there's almost not really words for it. You know, it's just like
listen to
there's so much going on, but then at the same time, it's like I don't even know what to say. It's funny. I actually like connected it today when I was listening to it. The going into that typical sort of 97 funk section, then it gets into that like Bliss jam, which is this pretty similar to the Denver Tweezer. You know, the couple of weeks before.
All right. Right.
And that combo of just like the funk into like that Bliss, and then I mean it keeps going from there. But yeah, it was. I remember the like when they got into the Bliss part out of the funk part. I just remember the place being like, I mean, people were just minds were being blown, like for sure, because like I think a lot of people hadn't heard the Denver show yet, you know. So this was all like fairly new. It took like, I don't know, I feel like it took two to four weeks to get a tape, and this was like 3 weeks after Denver, so I'm not sure we had Denver tapes yet, but I just remember the place being like totally blown away, and that's you know, just in the middle of like the Tweezer jam.
From just being a Deadhead, their jams kind of just went off into space, and they would always like go their separate ways and find their way back in the same spot. And what I remember coming away from with this show was just the stylistic changes in Fish's jam, like going from that funk to that Bliss, to that ambience, to another jam, just the transitions in and out. Just, I mean, that caught me. That was a thing. It almost took me away from the Dead at certain times in my life. Like the Dead, their jamming just kind of has no, I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, it's kind of just like more of the ambient, like, I know what you're trying to get at, but Fish has so many different styles, and you get all of that, well, not all of it, but you get a bunch of them here in this Tweezer, right? That
the way they go in and out of the changes, just, it's beautiful. I mean, mm-hmm. The Grateful Dead are rough around the edges sometimes, and I love that, and it's just
less polished, maybe, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But there's smooth too. Jerry was great at transitions himself. It's just there was just a difference there, and it really caught my eye within this Tweezer. You can especially hear it there.
Yeah, the I was just looking before we got on the phone at the review from our friend Wally Waxbanks on Fish.net, which he did like 5 or 6 years ago at this point. But he said, I love his Fish analysis. It's just so unique and interesting. And he said, like, it's the intense focus that does it for him. There's no dead spots, no throwaway moments, just like continuous shared creation, which is kind of it's totally true. It keeps going, you know? It's insane. And then going straight into Isabella without any break, any stop, any warning, really. Just like
just fluid
right into it. Yeah, it's fucking amazing.
I don't think I realized how special this show was in Fish lore until I started getting onto Fishnet and reading Waxbanks's review of this show. I think I went back to look at this and reading his review, and it was like, man, this guy writes down everything that's in my mind. Oh, man.
He's really good, yeah.
Just getting really into Fall 90s, all his reviews of all those shows are fantastic. I love that guy's reviews.
Yeah, he's so good. And he's working on a book now about a live one, which is going to be pretty interesting. His writing is just, there's nothing like it in terms of music, you know, like just music criticism. I don't know. What was the what do you remember about that segue into Isabella, Adam?
I remember thinking, I know this song. Is this a Fish song? And it's Hendrix cover, and it's kind of all I remember about it at the time. Just and now I want another one so bad.
Yeah, I haven't played it forever since '98, right? It was one of those things that you didn't realize you're getting such a treat when you were listening, right? Because that, especially coming out of that Tweezer, you're just like, oh, kind of like knocked back a little bit on my heels. And then this is like the knockout punch almost. The Isabella is just amazing, amazing. And it really wasn't long. If you go back and listen to it, it wasn't like a continued jam because it came out of the Tweezer so effortlessly.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of went back into the Tweezer jam a little bit.
A few minutes and then they jammed out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's like a dance party segment of Isabella, which is you know, the, I don't know, the whole three nights from Cleveland, Detroit, and then Dayton, it was just, every night was like mostly a dance party, you know? And that's like, it reminded me today when I was listening back to like Trey and Bittersweet Motel about, it's all about the energy, you know? Like, who cares about, although this, in this show, they hit the changes too, but they're just feeling it, man. It's just what a special few months, you know? And like you said, Adam, there's those times at the Deadhead too, where they just hit these months of space where it all made sense for on an ongoing basis, you know. It's just,
yeah,
it's so rare. But I don't know, man. The Isabella is
yeah, they just get in that groove and just rattle themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to explain. The one thing about Isabella, I guess I just looked before this, so they've only played Isabella 10 times, which is like somewhat surprising to me, but we saw this one, so that was what it was, I guess it was the sixth one that they played out of the 10. And then Brad, you and I saw the last one they played, which was Polaris 98.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at that show we were on the lawn, I remember looking up at the screen that was like above the lawn during Isabella and watching Trey's fingers and just being like, I couldn't understand how he was playing, how he was like jamming so many notes, just playing so many notes. But it's 10, like, think about Isabella in the Fish lore. Like, everyone knows, you know, this show obviously, but everyone knows that they play Isabella and they've only played it 10 times. It's just, it's sort of, you know,
not, they teased like it, was it last year?
Yeah. Yeah, they did tease it at Jones Beach in 2012.
2012 already?
Yeah, I know. Time flies. I only know that because the fish.net Isabella History has it the tease. That's the one that they have. But I feel like I've seen other people tweet about hearing, maybe everyone just like hears an Isabella tease every once in a while, you know?
Dave's like, energy guide of teases.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's like Sasquatch a little bit. Everybody wants to see it for sure.
And then so after that, like it's crazy when like they go into Twist, and then like Twist actually felt like a cool down song, which is like, you know, it's, you know that something's going on if Twist feels like it's like the song to like take the edge off for a minute and like relax.
Well, to start, it does, right? I mean, it kind of, it's that nice build that,
yeah.
The reason I love the song, really, is that nice build from the slow intro. Yeah, from the intro. And this is back in the day when it was like Twist Piper, and it was a combo almost, like you get one, you get the other. You don't get it as much now. I guess sort of recently it's been that way, but I don't know when it's, maybe late 90s, like 99 or something, they started to play them by themselves. I don't know if I'm making shit up right now, but it just seems to me back then, you know, coming out of the story of the ghost, they'd play them together exclusively. Maybe not. There's some homework.
Yeah, what was your take on that? On that one, Adam?
Twist is great. It's all about the Piper, man. The Piper that followed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it was sort of a shorter interlude, actually, going into that Piper, which is, again, just like, yeah, it just works. And they kind of like, same thing with the tweezer. They just, it seems like it could stop or it could fizzle out or whatever, and then they just keep picking it back up.
I kind of kept feeling like they were coming back into tweezer, but it just never came.
Yeah, and they, I mean, it's so interesting, like. We could debate forever, like why Trey at this, you know, at this, in this day and age, would go into Number Line, you know, at halfway through the Piper, or why he would, you know, go into Bug like halfway through that tweezer or whatever. And there's no way to tell, but it's just, it does make me think whether it's like a lack of feeling like it's a good idea going, you know, and he just kind of gets bored. I don't know if you guys have thoughts.
There's never an opportune time to play backwards on them. Every time he does it, it's a momentum killer. Right?
It does feel like that for sure. And then, like, once the song gets going, it's okay to me. I don't mind the song, but it's because of the intro. You know, it's like a jarring little like You just kind of like
fits. It's kind of just not ripcorded, but it's just never feels like it's feels right to just go into it.
Yeah, this just there's just no smooth way to go into that intro.
Yeah,
I mean, he played it on Tiny Desk, the Tiny Desk concert intro series thing. The number line. And everybody even there was like, oh god, not number line.
It really isn't that bad of a song. It's just that when it comes on, it's like, fuck, man.
It's funny, I was talking to Brian Brinkman, who's at Suffering Juke. I don't know if you do, Adam, but he's a great fan and does a lot of writing about Phish, and we were talking about this same thing last night, the ripcording, and we were sort of talking about the fact that Trey like is impatient, but only because of the fact that he's like constantly trying to pursue, you know, something new, something interesting, something novel. And I think when he feels like it's not going to happen, he just takes a right turn, you know, if a new idea pops into his head. I think that's kind of interesting if that plays to like where the band is now versus then, or if the music itself, if they've like kind of done it all or something. I don't know. It's really interesting to think about, though.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it could have something to do with just the volume of material they have. I mean, they had it back in 97, but, you know, maybe just because there's so many songs and they're all, they've taken that, like, let's play our own stuff almost exclusively, you know, that he just wants to get in as many songs as he can. I don't know. I mean, there's not really any 5-song second sets anymore. Not that that's a bad thing or a good thing, but.
Yeah, what do you think, Adam? Do you notice that? I mean, is this something that you're like that you think about at shows or when you're listening to shows?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of him just wanting to go on to the next song, and he's excited about playing something new. And sometimes it's just the jam that he's in, or the song that he's in has just run its course, and he knows it. He's got nothing left to provide for that, and he just goes on to the next. And sometimes it's not always what we agree on, but I mean, he's got to explore, and he's got to try new things out, and I mean, it's good for the band. I mean, it's good for him to be happy and do what he wants to do, so I can live with a few second set crap songs as long as it makes him happy and extends the life of their career.
Right, right. Exactly. I mean, it's another thing I was talking with Brian about last night. Like, I don't know, if you hold these guys in some sort of like regard as superheroes, then you're probably going to set yourself up for disappointment if you go and realize that they're going to do, and if you like it, you like it, and if you don't, you don't. But yeah, it's a concert and it's a band. It's not a they're not superheroes from another planet. They're just really like really really good musicians who are going to do what they want. They're going to play Mike songs. They're going to play Page songs. They're going to play, you know, they're going to play Let Me Lie once in a while, and they're going to play, like, you know, whatever they want. So you can either, like, go and like it, or you can just go and be pissed off. I don't know. It seems simple.
I think a lot of fans live in the era that they fell in love with the band. So, like, 97, if it was ours, we expect, like, 5-song second sets where they just improv the whole show and just all fluid and together. And we expect to be like that forever, but if it was like that forever, it'd be the same show all the time, and they got to change it up and bring new fans along. And
yeah, they wouldn't be evolving, they wouldn't be changing, which is the whole another reason everybody loves them too, is that they don't do the same things over and over again.
So if it was the same thing over and over again, I mean,
it's a good point.
Well, and Adam, Brad and I both, you know, I think Brad and I probably our favorite band is probably the Grateful Dead. Like, if I had to choose and say this is a band I would take for the rest of my life, it's really close between the Dead and Phish. So we're both huge Dead fans. But what's does this same thing happen within Dead fan circles in terms of the, you know, as they evolved and as they went to different years? Do you think these same kind of conversations were happening within the fan base?
I think so. I think it's more in our faces now with social media and everybody. I mean, you can get a show the next day and you can talk about it with thousands of people on your Twitter, and you can play Monday Morning Quarterback all you want. It's just, I think the Dead are kind of the same way, but it just wasn't out in the open. I mean, there was no social media back then. And I mean, if you look at Dead errors, like, the 70s, the 80s, and stuff like that. There's so many repeats in their songs. Like, just they can play a three-night run, and they'll have 10 songs that they play twice in that thing. We can't do that anymore. Like, if Fish played Cavern twice in a three-night run, people would go crazy. It's just times, and you just pick at them all you want. There's just so many comments.
Yeah. And I guess that's, you know, the maybe the fans who are sticking around from the old days, like us, you know, that is probably the more prevalent opinion, you know. But I know that there are definitely people who are living still in 1995 or 97 or 99 in terms of Fish, and that's going to be how they evaluate everything forever, you know.
And yeah, that's okay. I don't mind that. I mean, it was a good era and people love it, and it's just a different time, and it's just where the band is now, and
yeah,
you gotta live with it. Doesn't help to complain about it, or
yeah, it definitely doesn't. I don't know. It's kind of like a relationship. Like, everyone is different when, you know, as you evolve. Like, my relationship with my wife is different now than it was 5 years ago, you know, in lots of like great ways, but it's always going to be different. Right. So expecting them to be different than the way that humans like evolve is just, it's unrealistic. But sorry, that was a little of a tangent.
I think it was Adam Nicholas or somebody wrote on Twitter once, I'm not the same person I was in 95. Why do I expect Fish to be?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. That's a much better way to say it.
That tweet was probably 5 years ago when it stuck with me.
Nice. It's totally true. And so this show, they did the Sleeping Monkey and then into Tweezer Reprise and then the Rocky Top Encore. I don't remember, Brad, what happened after the show. I assume we drove back to Toledo, but I know that I wasn't necessarily going to go to the next night in Dayton, but then I did. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, we had exams that week. That was like the week of exams. Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was the week of exams.
I drove back from Dayton. I think I left Dayton at 1 or 2 a.m. and took back to Columbus at 2 or 3 or whatever. And then I had my first exam on Monday morning. It was an intro class, a first college exam ever. And I was like, this is either going to be good or be really bad.
There was an article in the paper the next day after the show, and I tried to find it online, but it's not, I don't know if they took it off or it's not there, but it was like labeled Jumping Jack Flash. Somebody jumped off the balcony there. I think they died at the show, actually.
Really?
So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember hearing something about that.
Wow. I had no idea.
And I tried to look back, and there's just nothing on the internet about it.
Oh, shit.
And my wife was at the show, and she talks about that. She's like, yeah, some kid, like, I don't know if he died or whatever. She's like, but it wasn't a good show for me. I'm like, you're one of a few people who can say that, because most people love it, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. That's fucking crazy. I had no idea. Well, Adam, thanks for you know, engaging with us in this conversation. Like you said, we've been talking about it online for like a year, going back and forth. So thanks for finally coming on and sharing it with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great.
Yeah, thanks for coming. We appreciate you taking the time. And this is obviously a great show to revisit. So hope everyone else enjoys as much as we did.
For sure. Thanks so much, guys. Absolutely.
Cool. Take it easy.
Awesome. Thanks for everybody for listening this week again. Let us know, or this episode, let us know what you think about the new format. Thanks to Adam. 12697 is obviously a feather in our hat, all of our hats. So check us out at HFPod on Twitter. Email us at helpingfriendlypodcast@gmail.com with your comments. As always, check out Cash or Trade as the summer gets nearer. For your shows. I guess the winter shows are still going on back east, but not out here. So
yeah.
Check out cashortrade.org. And as always, thanks for listening. And it was a fun time, Arj.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, agree. And if you don't like the setup, you can blame me. If you do like it, it was Brad's idea. So but yeah, we'll be back in a couple weeks. We're gonna have another good guest and we're gonna talk about another Fish concert. So everybody, take it easy and hope you don't get snowed in.
Snowed in.
Or hope you do get snowed in, I guess. You're not going to get snowed in, Brad, in Phoenix.
There's a couple clouds in the sky, though.
You better watch out. You better go. Oh. You might want to go stock up on duct tape. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Keep on rocking.